Good morning. Our first post-Easter gospel reading comes from one of the many stories told by Jesus' followers about life immediately after the death and resurrection of Jesus. This one tells of events later in the same day that the women had discovered the tomb empty. It features two disciples, one named Cleopas and the other unnamed. This evocative story invites us to imagine ourselves on the road after the bewildering events in Jerusalem, and how the risen Christ was somehow and mysteriously among them. Gospel of St. Luke, chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. Jesus walks the road to Emmaus. Now that very day, two of them were on their way to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking to each other about all the things that had happened. While they were talking and debating these things, Jesus himself approached and began to accompany them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Then he said to them, "What are these matters you are discussing so intensely as you walk along?" And they stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened there in these days?" He said to them, "What things?" "The things coming concerning Jesus the Nazarene," they replied, "a man who with his powerful deeds and words proved to be a prophet before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. Not only this, but it is now the third day since these things happened. Furthermore, some women of our group amazed us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back and said they had seen a vision of angels. And when they did not find his body, they came back and said they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But they said they didn't see him. So he said to them, 'You foolish people, how slow to heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Wasn't it necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things written about himself in all those scriptures. So they approached the village where they were going. He acted as though he wanted to go further, but they urged him, 'Stay with us, because it is getting toward evening and the day is almost done.' So he went in to stay with them. When he had taken his place at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. At this point, their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Then he vanished out of their sight. They said to each other, 'Didn't our hearts burn within us while he was speaking with us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us?' So they got up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem. They found the 11 and those with them gathered together saying, 'The Lord has really risen and he has appeared to Simon. Then they told what had happened on the road and how they recognized him when he broke the bread. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Will you join me in prayer? Holy One, in whom we live and move and have our being, alive among us, bless the words offered, heard, and all that flow from this experience. Guide our thoughts and our actions in the way of the risen Christ. Amen. We went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City a couple of years ago. If you ever make your way to New York City, it's not to be missed. Just an incredible, we could have spent days there looking at the history of art in the world, all gathered under one humongous roof. And I am no authority on art at all. I have paid some attention over the years to fine art. Mostly, I can identify some European and North American artists and their work. So when I get into the Renaissance room at the Museum of Modern Art, I looked around and there's Rembrandt. And I could tell it was Rembrandt because of the way that Rembrandt uses light, or used light, largely in portraits. How the light seems to not just bounce off but emerge from the faces that you're seeing. It's amazing. Very identifiable, very distinctive. And when we got to the post-impressionist room, I could pick out the Van Gogh. Again, the use of light, but completely different. And these broad brush strokes that make Van Gogh very distinctive. And portraits again. It's very distinctive. And other people could try to imitate that. And when they do, you would say, very good that you're trying to pull a Van Gogh. Right? It closer to home, you can recognize Group of Seven, right? Because there's something very distinctive about the way they worked with the shapes and their subject matter, the natural world in Canada. Emily Carr, same deal. Very distinctive. And it's not just art. If I was... Any tennis aficionados here? That telltale... Who am I talking about? Anybody? Sharapova. Maria Sharapova, yes, very distinctive. And anybody that plays like that, they play like Maria Sharapova. There's this great, I know there's hockey fans in this room.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, going back a little bit, there's this move that a particular player used to make, forward, heading into the offensive zone. Go one person to deep pass to go, and acts like he accidentally drops the puck, and the defender goes for the puck, and then he kicks it up and goes right around. Anybody know who did that? Sorry? Brewery? Yes, but before that, it was Gretzky. Gretzky perfected this incredible move. Drops it, kicks it, and goes around. It just, in the blink of an eye, and the defender's left kind of going, what just happened? And anybody that goes after, that comes after Gretzky that pulls that is pulling a Gretzky. Right? Those signature moves. When I am pouring drinks at our supper table with my family, sometimes I do this. Right? And when I do this, it has come to mean, oh, Dad, you're doing the Jesus pour. Why? Because at the communion table, ever since they can remember, when I pour the wine or the juice, I want, from a distance, I want people to see that you can actually, that I'm actually doing it. So I lift it up a little bit. Ah, Dad, you're doing the Jesus pour again. I have no idea how Jesus poured wine. None at all. But it's a signature move. And it's connected in their minds to what we do here and to the person of Jesus. Interesting. I want you to imagine that you are one of the disciples walking away from Jerusalem later on that first day. And in fact, the Bible would encourage us to do this simply by the way it is written. Two disciples on the road from Jerusalem to Emmaus on their way home, one named Cleopas and one named, not sure. Could be just about anybody. Could be you. So read yourself into the story here for a minute. Let's imagine. So you're with a good friend on your way home after a most devastating Passover weekend in Jerusalem. You had gone there to see Jesus, this great radical rabbi that you have been hearing about and following, and you had come to love and place huge hopes for change in this person. And you had hoped that actually this Passover would mark the beginning of the end of the Roman occupation and the beginning of a whole new era for your people. And you had gone to Jerusalem that weekend, brimming with hope. You're leaving confused and devastated. Things had gone terribly wrong. Somehow he got captured by the Romans with the collusion of the temple authorities. It all happened really fast, and he was brought out before all the people when they released those prisoners once a year at Passover. And all the people cried for some zealot from the hills, Barabbas. And he was taken to Golgotha and was crucified. And then some women said something very confusing. That they'd gone to the tomb to give him a proper burial and he was missing. And they said they had seen a vision, and that vision had said that he was risen. It's all very weird and confusing. Perhaps you're not the only ones on the road either. This is after Passover leaving Jerusalem. Likely the road was fairly crowded. There are others. And as you're walking along, a stranger, one of many strangers, comes alongside and you end up talking with this stranger. And amazed that he hasn't heard of Jesus, you tell him the whole story. And clearly he is someone who knows his Bible. because he meets your amazement with his own as he talks about your people's long hope for a Messiah, a suffering servant, a prophet, and how this may well not just be the end, but really perhaps maybe a beginning. And on that road, you're thinking, this all sounds weirdly familiar, but you just can't place it. In your grief and your confusion, you hear notes of familiarity in what he is saying, enough to want to hear more. And when you finally get to your home at the end of the day and he seems to be moving on, you invite him to stay over. And you prepare a meal together. Nothing special. Just a meal. And you ask your guest to offer a blessing. And he takes the bread. And he blesses it. And he breaks it. And he offers it. And then, all of a sudden, you realize that this stranger is no stranger at all. And that your Messiah is not actually gone after all, but that by some mysterious hand of the grace of God, he is alive again, and you know it. And can see as he blesses, breaks, and offers that you're not alone. He shows you his signature move. And it's the big reveal. The one thing that he always used to do over meals, not just that last one, but all of those meals, he becomes known for his meals and for this one thing that he did, blessing, breaking, offering. It's him. He's alive. And that move is the big reveal for you. Even now, Christ is alive. Even now, Christ is alive and incognito, just as he was on that first day in the world among us. Christ, that one who loves with an all-encompassing love, a transforming love, is alive and in the world, but kind of undercover. Or perhaps it's just that we can't see. Not immediately visible to us, like the stranger on the road. So filled are we with the thoughts of our own lives that we may not realize who we're walking with, who we're journeying with, who is right here among us. But he has a signature move, which has become for us both a call to attentiveness and a call to participation. Watch, attend, pay attention in your life whenever you see love and life and bread blessed and broken and offered in the radically free way of Jesus. Pay attention, because somewhere in there you will experience a blessing and a change and a transformation that is a sign of the presence of the living Christ. Pay attention. But it's also a call to participate. As people of the resurrection, we're called to try it. Try Jesus' signature move. Try blessing and breaking and offering. Try it with bread. Try it with the things you hold dear within yourselves. Bless them and break them open for your neighbors and offer them. Try it with what you have and who you are. Bless what you have and who you are. Break it open and offer it. Try it here as we bless the life that God gives us together as Northwood, as the United Church, as we break open our community in the world and offer what we have and who we are. Try it at home, at work. Try it secretly. Try it in your heart. Give thanks. Break it open a little. Offer it without fanfare. And I believe that as you do that, as we do that, Christ shows up, is revealed again, because it's his signature move. Amazingly, 2,000 years later, it's not just his signature move. In fact, it has become our signature move as Christian community. It needs to be part of everything we do, this blessing, breaking, offering, so that it's not just a big reveal to us. Familiar mark of the risen Christ. But it's a signature move and a big reveal of us to the world. So that when other people look at us or look at the community, what they see is blessing, breaking, offering. I recognize that move. Christ is alive. Amen. Speaking of blessing, breaking open, and pouring out, and offering, let's continue in our worship as we do exactly that with the gifts that God has given us in our life, both financially but also in our life together as a community of faith. Yeah, go ahead. There are some announcements. First of all, I'm going to just run those pictures. This is what happened yesterday. Here, as you drove up today, if you weren't here yesterday, you likely noticed this place is looking considerably sharper than it did just 2 days ago. Thank you to everyone who came out. It was a great day. A special thank you to Lisa Sutherland, who organized the thing with the help of some folks in the kitchen, Jim Silva, who helped with lots, and Joe with lots of ideas about what needed to be done around here. The list is not completely finished. I don't know about your house, but our house, there's always stuff to do. So we're not finished, but had a good day yesterday, so and also at that day, yesterday, we had an opportunity because it was Lisa's last kind of formal act and as one of our ministry employees, we gave thanks to her and had a little moment of thanks. But she's not here today. If you bump into her, she's not big on stepping forward in front of a bunch of people and receiving the community's thanks. She's kind of more background person. So stop by if you see her and just say, hey, noticed what you did. Thank you very much for that. It's meant a lot to our community. Judy, you want to see?
Thank you. I'm here to report a little bit more about our refugee committee. And I feel that it's a little bit like watching a duck on the water. You know, not much is happening sometimes, but lots